You're listening to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, episode 44. Welcome to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, where we bring you engaging conversations about wildlife conservation issues from all across the globe. I'm your host, Matt Podolsky. Today in the show, we're talking with vaquita expert and author, Aidan Bodio-Lamaki. If you're a regular listener of the podcast, you know that here at Wild Lens, we are working on producing a feature-length documentary about the world's most endangered marine mammal, the vaquita. This film is called Souls of the Vermilion Sea, and we interviewed two of the world's foremost experts on the vaquita in previous episodes of the show, Dr. Barbara Taylor in episode 28 and Dr. Lorenzo Rojas Bracho in episode 30. Today, we have as our guest someone who has been approaching the vaquita issue from a very different perspective. Aidan first learned about the plight of the vaquita back in 2010, when he was just 10 years old. Today, at age 15, he has now been actively involved in working to save this species for a third of his life. Over these past 5 years, Aidan has started a website dedicated to sharing information about the vaquita, vlogvaquita.com, and he wrote a book entitled The Vaquita, The Biology of an Endangered Porpoise. Aidan first published this book when he was just 13 years old, and it remains the only book written about this species for a general audience. Just this year, Aidan released the second edition of his book, which now includes more detailed information on current efforts to save the species from extinction. As a 15-year-old sophomore in high school, Aidan is reaching a critically important audience with his message of conservation and species recovery. As he explains in the interview, this younger generation that he belongs to has a unique perspective on conservation issues, and Aidan insists that giving up hope is simply not an option. This is a particularly inspiring interview about one young man's mission to save a species. Listen in and share with your kids. I'm here with Aidan Bodio-Lamaki, who is the president of the Musqua Club, the author of the book, The Vaquita, The Biology of an Endangered Porpoise, and also the creator of the vaquita-themed website and blog, vlogvaquita.com. How are you doing, Aidan?
Good, how are you?
I'm fantastic. It's awesome to have you on the show today. The first question that I want to throw at you is the most basic one, which is just how did you first learn about the vaquita and how old were you at the time?
It was in 2010. I was 10 years old and I was just going through the internet, just kind of looking around because I was very interested in marine mammals at that time also. So I was looking for a way to adopt a sperm whale, which was my favorite animal at the time. And so I ended up at the Save the Whales website, and in the top corner, there was a link to a page about the vaquita. And I had heard about the vaquita before with my field guides, but I had never, I didn't know it was so endangered. So I clicked on it, and I read all about it, and I was really appalled by the situation, and that's kind of what got me started.
Gotcha. So what did you do in response to learning about this situation faced by the vaquita? What was sort of the first step in response to learning this information?
The first thing I did was I sent an email to Dr. Tom Jefferson through the Viva Vaquita website, and he got back to me right away, and he was really receptive of my enthusiasm and sent me a package of a bunch of vaquita items and books and stuff, so it was a really great start.
So you first learned about the vaquita in 2010 when you were 10 years old. It's now 2015, which means that you've been working to help save this species for a third of your life at this point. I guess I'm just wondering how that feels.
it feels good. I have a lot of time invested into it, so I definitely do not want to see anything bad happen to the species.
Yeah, it's clear that you have a really strong commitment to this conservation effort to save the vaquita. However, despite that, I mean, a lot has happened to vaquita populations during this 5-year period during which you've been involved. I mean, maybe you can just kind of take a moment to kind of summarize from your perspective, like what you've seen happen to vaquita populations, you know, since you first got involved back in 2010.
Yeah. So when I first started, the population was estimated to be 246 individuals, which of course is extremely low. And it was really, I was amazed that there was a species that was so endangered that nobody pretty much has even heard of. And then there was not much conservation going on. It was right after the big 2008 expedition. So that was the big story at the time. That's also around the time when Chris Johnston's documentary came out. So that was one of the first things I watched about the vaquita. And I got a good overview of the situation. And then as time went on, there kept being new reports of the population getting lower and lower, which we thought was due to, and probably was due to, the shrimp fishery. But then in 2014, this population plummeted to 97 individuals, and we've discovered the resurgence of the illegal totoaba fishery, which was really disturbing because we had no idea that it was happening. We thought it was a problem of the past, and it turned out to be the new biggest threat of the vaquita. And now recently, there's been some of the biggest strides during my entire time with the vaquita, which is really encouraging. And hopefully the Mexican government will do enough to save it.
You know, there's sort of this question that that comes up, you know, whenever a group of people are trying to address a really sort of critical conservation threat to a species, like what's happening with vaquita, when they're in this sort of crisis period where it seems like it could go either way, like the species could be extinct in just a few years, or we could sort of turn it around and bring it back. And, you know, I think there are a handful of individuals and organizations that have probably already given up hope for the vaquita at this point, you know, with less than 100 individuals remaining. And despite the fact that, you know, this 2-year ban on the use of gill nets has been implemented by Mexico, you know, there are still a lot of sort of unanswered questions and a lot of difficulties associated with the actual enforcement of that ban.
Right.
So I guess my question for you is, what would you say to folks that, you know, maybe have given up hope already?
Well, first off, I will definitely never give up hope, even if there are only like 5 individuals left. There's always still a possibility of recovery. A lot of animals have recovered from smaller populations than the vaquita is at right now, even in Mexico. So that's a really good sign. Mexico knows how to save species that are on the absolute brink of extinction. And also, the vaquita is a species that it has evolved to survive very low numbers. It's always had a small population. So their genetics are specialized for surviving very low population sizes. So the vaquita probably is more adapted than any other species, any other marine mammal, to survive such low numbers. So it's definitely not going to be too late. There have been even more amazing recoveries. The vaquita really can recover.
You know, it's really important to point out successful endangered species recovery programs, you know, situations in the past with other species that have, you know, dropped down to really, really low numbers, and in some cases even lower than where the vaquita population is at right now. And they have recovered successfully.
Right. Like the elephant seal in Mexico was down to only a handful of individuals, and now there's in the high thousands or hundreds of thousands even. So it's definitely possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a really good example that we've sort of brought up as well. And the other important point that you bring up is the issue over the genetics of the vaquita, which I think is another really important point for folks to consider. Because every time you start talking about a species that has dropped to such low numbers, less than 100 individuals, people start to worry about genetic diversity? And even if, you know, we're able to eliminate the threats to the vaquita, you know, is it sort of doomed no matter what because of low genetic diversity within the population because it's so small? And it turns out with the vaquita, that's really not the case. And the reason for that is that the population is sort of naturally small and has likely undergone sort of a genetic bottleneck at some point in the past and survived that. So it sort of has this naturally low genetic diversity and, like you said, this sort of ability to deal with a bottleneck like this better than probably most other species because it's gone through similar situation in the past. And that's something that we talked in depth about with Dr. Barbara Taylor on a previous episode of the podcast. So folks can check that out if they want to get some more in-depth information on, you know, specifically the genetics, the population genetics of the vaquita. So realistically, it's going to take many people working from lots of different angles to address this issue and successfully save the vaquita from extinction. What role do you see yourself as playing in this sort of large vaquita recovery effort?
Because I am so far away from the vaquita in proximity, I can't really do anything physical, like on the water or community outreach in Mexico. So the best thing, in my opinion, that I could do is online outreach and through social media and things like that, and really just trying to get the word out to as many people as we can. And so I think that's my kind of niche in the effort.
You know, a lot of our listeners are probably in a similar situation where, you know, they don't live anywhere near where the vaquita lives in northwestern Mexico. And, you know, maybe they're learning about this species for the first time and want to find a way to help the species in some way. And I think sort of using your example, like what you have done and all that you've accomplished in sort of spreading awareness about this species within the U.S., I think it's really important to sort of highlight that as a way to show folks that, you know, you do have the ability to have an impact. So, I mean, I guess, is there anything else that, I mean, when you talk to people about vaquita or when you give presentations about the species, you know, what do you tell people about, you know, how to get involved in the issue?
There are a lot of ways to get involved, but I think some of the best ways for people that don't live near the vaquita are to spread the word online, donate to vaquita organizations, sign petitions, and be responsible with your seafood consumption. I think those are the four best ways to help the vaquita. And just stay updated with all the developments on Facebook or my blog. And stay in the loop and do whatever you can.
The URL for your blog is vlogvaquita.com. So that's a really good resource for folks that are looking to sort of get those updates on vaquita conservation issues. I want you to tell me a little bit about the Muskwaw Club. How did you first get involved in this group? And I mean, what is the Muskwaw Club?
Okay, so the Muskwaw Club is a student-run organization that specializes in conservation and particularly the vaquita effort. And so the Muskwaw Club contacted me about 2 years ago through my website. The president at the time, William Wittenberry, found my blog and emailed me. And ever since then, we've had a really good partnership. And now I'm actually the president of the Muskwaw Club. And so what the Muskwaw Club does, their main effort is having tables around the country for the vaquita. And our biggest accomplishment is International Save the Vaquita Day, which is in July every year for the past 3 years. And it's become a huge event. Last year had 22 tables around the world promoting the vaquita's cause. And we've educated thousands and thousands of people about the vaquita.
I was one of those 22 folks that were giving presentations this past year at International Save the Vaquita Day here in Boise, Idaho, at the Aquarium of Boise. And so, yeah, you know, I mean, you reached us, you reached this little corner of Idaho. So I want you to tell me a little bit more about your website and blog. When did you first start this website?
I started Vlog in 2011, about a year after I found out about the cause. And it really just started off as a way for me to like post poems and like little Vaquita facts that I read online. And it wasn't really anything special. But as it kept going, I got a lot more people, a lot more views, and people seemed to be really interested. So as I got more involved with the Vaquita conservation effort, I was able to really elaborate on my website. And now it's mainly just a news website for the Vaquita. And it's one of the few like news outlets that specifically for the Vaquita, where you can find out all the information that's going on and all the updates. And I also have pages where you can learn about how to help the Vaquita, pictures of the Vaquita, things like that.
Yeah, it's a really fantastic resource. And once again, I'll just share that URL. It's vlogvaquita.com. You can check that out there. So I'm just sort of wondering, you know, sort of the progression of events here. So, I mean, you first learned about the Vaquita in 2010. You started your website in 2011. At what point did you decide to start writing a book about this species?
I think it was around the same time, or a little after, I started a vlog, so about 2011 or 12, and I started writing the book because I really wanted a Vaquita book, and I couldn't find any online or anything, so I thought I would just write one myself. So I just started writing it, and it was basically just an overview of the Vaquita itself, and so once the Musqua Club contacted me, William's mother, Beth, she had contacts at a publishing company, so I was able to get that published, which was really awesome. I don't think I would have stuck with the book if they hadn't told me about that. So that was great. And then the second edition came out early this year, and I really updated it in terms of the conservation effort and helping the Vaquita. So it's a lot longer now, and I added more illustrations and things like that.
I guess I'm just sort of wondering, you know, what this process was like. I mean, you started writing this book about the Vaquita when you were only 11 or 12 years old. It's just, I mean, that in and of itself seems really amazing to me. It's a whole lot more productive than anything I was doing at that age. I mean, how did you find time to work on this, you know, in addition to all of the schoolwork and other stuff you had going on at that point?
Yeah, I guess I just, instead of watching TV or playing video games at night, I guess I would just sit on my computer and just write a little bit at a time. Yeah, I didn't have too much homework back then, so that wasn't that big of a deal.
It's interesting. I think, you know, you ask any author, and I think they'll tell you the same thing, you know, at least folks who sort of, you know, have to find that little block of time every single day to just focus on writing in order to sort of reach that ultimate end goal of having, you know, a finished book ready to publish. And it's amazing to me that you sort of figured that out on your own, of like what you needed to do to accomplish this larger goal at such a young age. It's really remarkable.
Thank you.
I imagine that the process of writing this book connected you with many of the world's foremost experts on the Vaquita. I mean, what was it like to talk with all these people and sort of get this information from them for your book?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was great. Like, in my eyes at the time, they were like celebrities to me. So it was really exciting to even get one email from them, let alone like talking with them and having them like really help me and teach me about the Vaquita. It was really exciting.
Your book presents sort of, you know, basic biology of the species and information about conservation of the vaquita, but it sort of blends this factual information with poetry, original poetry that you wrote, as well as drawings and illustrations of the vaquita. So it's very much this sort of blend of science and art, which I really love and is sort of central to a lot of the work that we do here at Wild Lens as well. What led you to include this poetry and this artwork alongside the factual information about the species?
I think growing up, a lot of my favorite books kind of blended art with information, and I feel like it really helped me understand things better, it being able to see it and being like inspired by it as opposed to just reading facts. So I happen to really like drawing and writing, so it was kind of a convenient. So I just included everything that I could to try to make people really appreciate the situation and the vaquita.
I'm wondering if you've ever connected with any like similar age students from Mexico that are interested in getting involved with vaquita conservation and recovery efforts.
Well, the Muscle Club has a few members in Mexico that have been really awesome, and they've had tables in Mexico. So I think we have a really good beginning, the beginnings of a really great program in Mexico, and hopefully we can really expand and have a lot more people in the vaquita's communities that are really trying to help the vaquita. Also, the fact that they would be kids would make it really powerful, because they're the future of the vaquita's conservation, because they're going to be the next generation of fishermen or hotel owners or restaurant owners or anything like that. So they really are going to define what happens to the vaquita.
What makes this issue and your efforts related to vaquita, I mean, is this bigger than the vaquita?
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever happens with the vaquita, I think will have a really big effect on the future of many, many species, especially because the vaquita's threat is seen throughout the world for so many other marine species. And I think if we save the vaquita, it'd be an incredible example for other communities on how to coexist with species and also how to overcome the gillnet situation. But if we do not save the vaquita, it will send a message that we don't really care enough, and we're not going to try hard enough to save the species. And if we can't save the vaquita, who only has one major threat, how do we expect to save species that have like 10 or 15 threats? So I really think it's important that we send a really positive message throughout the world that we can save these endangered species that we're destroying.
We're at a point now in the history of this planet where, you know, we're sort of standing on the brink of the sixth mass extinction event, which is being caused largely by human activity. Like, how do you sort of find hope in that?
Well, yeah, it's a great question. I think I probably wouldn't be doing this if I didn't have hope for the future. I really do think that we can save our planet from what we've done to it over the past few hundred years, and we're not in a good shape if we aren't able to succeed. So we pretty much don't have an option, and I think luckily there's still time to save the species that we have and have these species survive way past all of our lifetimes and continue to keep the ecosystems healthy and keep the world turning.
Do you feel like you have a very different perspective or different outlook on conservation issues like what's happening with the vaquita?
Yeah, I think the main difference is that people that are younger, they really have to care, because they're the ones who are going to see what happens. Not like the older generations, they do care, but they're not going to be the ones that see the outcome of all this, either good or bad work. So Yeah, I think as the youngest generation, it really matters to us, because if we don't fix our act, like we're going to be the ones that are going to be punished by it.
It's inspirational, you know, to me to see someone like yourself in the position that you're at, you know, just sort of going all in and committing yourself to this issue.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And I would encourage folks, you know, one last time to check out your website, vlogvaquita.com. You can get yourself a copy of Aiden's book about the vaquita on that website. And yeah, it was a fantastic talking with you, Aiden. And thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, that was our interview with vaquita expert and author Aiden Bodio-Lamaki. I can't help but wonder where I might be today if I'd spent more time writing and less time in front of the TV when I was Aiden's age. Aiden talks about this in such a nonchalant way. Of course he had time to write and publish a book at age 13, but it is truly an impressive achievement. The most inspiring component of this conversation, however, is Aiden's refusal to give up hope, not just for the vaquita, but for the planet as a whole. I would strongly encourage folks to check out Aiden's website, vlogvaquita.com, and order a copy of his book about the vaquita. Learn more about this fascinating species, and let's help Aiden spread some of this optimism and hope throughout the conservation world. Of course, that link to Aiden's site, along with other relevant links, can be found on the show notes page for this episode at wildlensinc.org/EOC44. This episode was produced by myself, your host, Matt Podolsky. Our theme music is by The Humidors.